time and place for us to conduct a public hearing on the ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 115, zoning, and Article 21, signs. During this hearing, if anyone will have a short presentation by planning zoning staff and also assistant county attorneys. If you intend to speak, you're required to come to the front, stand at the speaker stand, state your name and home address before you make the statement. Please sign in the sheet at the speaker stand. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. Do not repeat yourself. If you have a written statement, hand it to me, and it will be made part of the record. If there is more than one witness for the, on this matter, please not repeat points that prior speaker has stated. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, please take the time now to turn it off or switch it to silent service. Since the planning and zoning defer on this matter, council will not act on the matter today, but the public hearing will go forward. After we have a presentation from planning, zoning staff, and assistant county attorneys, there will be an opportunity for the county council to ask any questions, and after that, we'll open this up for public comment. Mr. Lang?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We have before us an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 115, zoning, Article 22, or 21, excuse me, for signs. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this ordinance on May 12th of 2016. During the public hearing process, Jamie Sharp, Esquire of Moore and Rutt, gave presentation through a PowerPoint. There were questions raised by Mr. Burton and Mr. Ross about the proposed ordinance not matching some of the working group's recommendations. David Hutt, Esquire, Wilson, James, Halbrook, and Byard, LLP, was present on behalf and representing Clear Channel Outdoors, Geyer Signs, Hawker Signs, Jack Lingo Realtors, JD Sign Company, Ocean Atlantic, Phillips Signs Incorporated, Premier Outdoor Media, LLC, Rogers Sign Company Incorporated, and Timmons Outdoor Advertising, and gave presentation and provided an exhibit booklet and offered an alternate version of the ordinance. Andy Strine and Terry Strine, both local businessmen, were present and spoke in opposition. Jason Dean of JD Signs were present and responded to some of the questions raised by the commission on electronic message displays. Dan Kramer and Paul Rigger were present and made reference to enforcement. Dennis Forney was present and stated he was on a working group and there needs to be distance between billboards and better enforcement. Ben Phillips, Gerald Hawker Jr., and Lynn Rogers were present, and they also spoke in opposition to the application for the amendment to the ordinance. And Mr. Ross made a motion to defer. It was seconded by Mr. Burton and carried unanimously, and the commission does have this ordinance on their agenda for Thursday evening, this week, the 26th, for further consideration. And if I may, I'll refer and defer to Jamie Sharp, Esquire, to do a short presentation on behalf of the ordinance proposal. Thank you.
Good afternoon, council members. We've had a presentation before you last month, and without going into all the detail there, we have circulated a copy of the introduced ordinance with some line numbers on there, so that may help you with some ease of reference as you go through this. Just as a brief overview, some of the issues that were addressed in the introduced ordinance were definitions, where there were some new definitions and some amendments to some existing ones, a list of some signs that would be prohibited. There was a section on fees and permitting, as well as a section on some on-premise signs. We significantly addressed issues with billboards, such as setbacks, separation distances, heights, and so on and so forth, as well as electronic message centers, which was considered, we put a new section for those. Illumination standards were implemented into this proposed ordinance, the introduced ordinance. Fines were also addressed, and non-conforming signs were also mentioned in the introduced ordinance. In reviewing it thereafter, as is the case, it's sometimes the more you look at things, the more you think things could be improved. Staff has noted there are a few items which would be suggested amendments just from our internal review of it. The first would be the inclusion of a purpose statement which states the reasons that we would have a sign ordinance to begin with. Second would be a severability clause which would state that in the event that there was a portion of the ordinance that was deemed to be invalid by a court, it would not invalidate the entire ordinance. And a substitution clause which would allow for non-commercial copy to go on to a commercial sign. The classic example would be if you had a billboard and you wanted to put up a PSA or something along those lines, that would allow for that. And these are things that we've uncovered through some research in recent weeks. We also noticed there were a couple of minor typos. Direct you to line 870 and 879. It looks like there are two sections that say G. And
pages,
870 and 879, it would be the second to last page. If you notice there's two sections titled G, so we would need to renumber those to G, H, and then the one that behind that is I. And if you go a few more pages forward, apologize to have you go back, line 578. There's a reference there to the rear yard setback equal to the required front yard setback, and it should be the rear yard setback. So again, just a minor change there that we've noticed. And lastly, on the very last page, in looking at the synopsis, it should read on line 922, on as opposed to upon. So again, a couple of minor items for housekeeping purposes, some amendments that we would suggest from the team's perspective. As noted by Mr. Lank, Planning and Zoning Commission held a hearing earlier this month, and it is on their agenda for Thursday evening.
If not, prior to opening up the hearing, as I alluded to during our regular session, there are three letters I would like to read into the record. The first is from the National Federation of Independent Business. This letter was dated May 24, 2016, and it's referenced support for alternate sign ordinance legislation. On behalf of Delaware Small Businesses, the National Federation of Independent Business offers its support for the alternate sign ordinance legislation offered by Mr. David Cutt, Esquire, on behalf of concerned local and regional businesses. The current proposal before the council adversely impacts small businesses and restricts their ability to advertise for goods and services. According to the U.S. Small Business Administration, on-premise signs provide the most effective and least expensive form of advertising for small businesses. The alternate proposal regulates brightness, prohibits flashing and scrolling signage. It is responsible, enforceable, and business friendly. For those reasons, NFIB Delaware supports the alternate sign ordinance proposal brought before and urges its adoption. The second letter is to members of Sussex County Council. I am writing you today regarding the proposed sign ordinance the council is contemplating. Signage is a very important piece of business, of a business marketing plan, and having a sign ordinance that balances the needs of businesses with the concerns raised by this council and residents is very important. Upon reviewing both proposed ordinances, I'm inclined to support and urge the council's support of the alternate sign ordinance that was offered by Mr. David Hutt. The proposal by Mr. Hutt provides necessary and appropriate regulation while ensuring ease of compliance for business owners. I also believe that the HUD proposal reflects an understanding of modern signage and business needs that will allow the ordinance to be embraced by the diverse interests in each area of Sussex County. I thank you for your time. Thank you for your service to our mutual constituents. Warmest personal regards, Brian G. Pettiger. And the last is a letter that was emailed to council on May 23rd. Please consider this email as a strong endorsement of the alternate sign ordinance being presented. Hale Marine Center is a 44-year-old family-owned business in Sussex County off Route 1 near Argo's Corner. Because of the Department of Transportation's change of Route 1 many years ago to bypass our Highway 1 frontage, our road signage along the highway has been our lifeline to allow us to continue to advertise to our customers and let them know we are healthy and conducting business. Our extensive investment in electric signage a year and a half ago was not made easily, but we felt with existing ordinances and restrictions at the time it was worth it. By enacting the sign ordinance as it's being considered, it would considerably harm our business. Again, this is the strongest of endorsements for the alternative sign ordinance. Thank you for your time. Dirk Van Rees, President Taylor Reed Center. At this time, we're open to public hearing. Would anyone like to come forward and address this matter? Anyone? I see Mr. Huff coming forward.
Good afternoon, council members. I think all of you know me at this point, but my name is David Hutt. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown with a law firm of Morris, James, Wilson, Halbrook, and Byard. Over the past decade or more now, I've represented numerous applicants in front of you, the Board of Adjustment, the Planning and Zoning Commission. Several, obviously, of those applications have involved signs, whether it's before the Board of Adjustment or in front of the Planning Commission, where as part of a conditional use application, there's often a component of that that relates to signs and the type of signage that will be allowed on whatever's permitted within that conditional use and what those conditions might be. As was indicated when Mr. Lang read in the minutes, or essentially the minutes or a summary of those minutes from the Planning and Zoning Commission, this afternoon I am representing and presenting an alternate ordinance that is supported by Clear Channel Outdoor, Geyer Signs, Hocker Signs, Jack Lingo Realtors, JD Sign Company, Ocean Atlantic Companies, Phillips Sign Inc., Premier Outdoor Media LLC, Rogers Sign Company Inc., and Timmins Outdoor Advertising. As many of you will likely recall, in August, when County Council was considering entering a moratorium with respect to applications for off-premise signs, I spoke and observed at that time that it was a mystery to me how County Council's prior discussions over the last several months leading up to that relating to bandit signs and the brightness of on-premise signs would lead to a moratorium on off-premise signs. As I said then, and it still remains the case, a moratorium is one of the most extraordinary and severe tools that this body has in its toolbox of zoning powers. While I am rarely surprised when the actions of our federal government across the Bay Bridge are mysteriously disconnected. It is surprising when local government is this mysterious. Unfortunately, the course of this matter has only added to the mystery. As was referenced a moment ago from the comments that were made at the Planning Commission, and which I'll detail a little further right now. A little more than 5 years ago, questions about the sign ordinance, and in particular electronic message centers, was raised here in Sussex County. At that time, there were several public hearings. There were alternate ordinances that were drafted. And in fact, if you go to Sussex County's website today and go to the ordinance tab on the website, what you will see is you will see introduced ordinances, and the ordinance that we're here on today will be the ordinance that is shown there. And right below that is pending ordinances. And the 2011 pending ordinances are still there, just as they have been since 2011. At that time, experts in the industry were called here to discuss before council, in particular, electronic message centers, brightness standards, and those types of issues that have arisen with electronic signs. 5 years later, in April of 2015, the board sent a letter to county council asking the council to review the sign code to use the words from their letter to determine if any changes are required. 5 months after that, county council introduced and proposed a moratorium on off-premise signs. That proposal, as all zoning proposals are, was then sent to the Planning and Zoning Commission for a recommendation. The Planning Commission considered the proposed moratorium, including the letter from the Board of Adjustment, and recommended that the proposed moratorium be rejected. Mysteriously, County Council disregarded the Planning Commission's recommendation and adopted the moratorium anyway. When the moratorium was enacted, County Council stated that it wanted to have a short moratorium and it wanted to, as part of this process, assemble a working group of employees, sign owners, sign company representatives, and members of the public to review the sign ordinance and make recommendations to council. The working group met several times. Several of you participated in some of those meetings. Many of the participants are sitting behind me. And all of those participants have been greatly disappointed by the fact that the recommendations that were made by the working group to a joint session of County Council, the Board of Adjustment, and the Planning and Zoning Commission on February 9th of this year, were wholly disregarded and set aside. As I mentioned, this is the mystery of this matter, and the unfortunate course of this matter is that at every step of the way, when what people had hoped was going to be a valuable tool and resource in the working group, which made numerous recommendations, that these would be followed or at least used as part of a draft ordinance. When the draft ordinance was introduced last month, or a little more than a month ago now, it obviously looks nothing like any of the recommendations that came out of that working group. Because of those stark differences between what the working group recommended and was presented as part of that on February 9th, and the ordinance that was introduced by council, members of the sign industry and sign owners, sign companies, gathered together and asked me to prepare an alternate ordinance that reflected what occurred during the course of that working group. The first tab in the exhibit notebook that was handed down to each of you a moment ago is the alternate sign ordinance that I drafted and presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission at their last meeting. There are two minor differences between what was presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission and what is Exhibit 1 in the notebook that you have in front of you, and I'll address those as we walk through the ordinance. Before we do that, though, I also wanted to reference for you, sort of give you a key or a legend as you look at Exhibit 1. When the county, through Mr. Sharp and Mr. Gulbronson's work, was deleting things, it put the whatever language or text it was deleting into brackets, and those brackets remain in what's in Tab 1. When the county had an addition, it had a single underscore or underline for items that it was proposing to add to the sign ordinance. In the alternate addition, those same designations are there, and in addition, there's a strike-through for things that the alternate ordinance proposes be deleted. In addition, if there is going to be an addition, rather, to the alternate ordinance, those items are double underlined. And finally, the changes from the Planning Commission version that was presented as the alternate ordinance to the version that you see in tab one of your exhibit notebook is highlighted in yellow. And if it was a deletion, there's a double strike through instead of a single strike through for each of those items. As Mr. Sharp indicated a moment ago, the changes that are proposed in the alternate ordinance began with the definition section of the ordinance. And again, I'm not going to walk through each of the proposed changes because they are highlighted and stricken through and double underlined. But I am going to highlight a few of them as we go through this. The first one is that the alternate ordinance proposes the introduction and inclusion of a definition of the term ground level. Currently, there is not a defined method or term for how you measure the height of a sign. And as I indicated, I think even at the working group and before the Planning Commission, some property owners have seen fit to add fill to their property to make their signs higher. Obviously, this impacts a neighboring property because then the sign is higher than their neighbor's or will block their neighbor's sign. The proposal here is to standardize the definition of ground level to be the average grade of a property or the elevation at the center line of the adjacent street or road, whichever is higher. And that plays a role in both on and off-premise signs, as this would be the height at which you would measure a sign from, again, whether it was on or off-premise. If you move down that page, which is page 3 at tab 1, the county was, in the introduced ordinance, was proposing to modify the definition of a multi-faced sign. And the definition that was proposed has a profound impact on the facings of a sign, and I'll go through that in a little more detail. So if you can just sort of earmark that one as something that we'll come back to as to why that definition is important. And what's proposed in the alternate ordinance is that the definition stay exactly as it is in the current ordinance. The definition of public land in the alternate ordinance includes private lands within that definition. Now, the private lands that it proposes to include are private lands that are subject to an agricultural preservation program with the United States or the state of Delaware. It's a curiosity. I'm not sure how many properties this could possibly apply to, as off-premise signs, the definition of public lands only applies to off-premise signs in the first instance, and you can only place an off-premise sign on commercial property or industrial property. And to my knowledge, those properties are not part of agricultural preservation programs, but to the extent that the definition is inclusive of private lands, the proposal is to delete the reference to public lands that are privately owned, as it states within the new term. The next term, I'm going to highlight this one again. It'll become more significant in a moment when we get further into the ordinance, but there's a new definition for sign copy that the county proposes to add, and there's not any change that the alternate ordinance proposes. So I'm just going to highlight it, that it indicates that the sign message is words, letters, numbers, pictures, logos, and symbols. If you turn the page, the county's proposed ordinance modified the definition, or actually deleted electronic message display, and the alternate ordinance inserts that back in. And the reason for that is because terms like dissolving, fading, frame, scroll, and transition, which are important terms with respect to electronic message centers, this would keep them in the code. Again, the proposal would be to insert them back into the code just as they currently are in the existing version of the sign code. Turning to page 6 of the alternate ordinance, you will see about two-thirds of the way down the page the new definitions that have been proposed to be inserted by the county, one for non-conforming signs and the other for non-conforming off-premises sign. And in both of those, the alternate ordinance proposes striking the language that says by permit. One of the goals of the working group from the outset was to be careful not to create new categories and broaden the categories of non-conforming signs. There are many signs in Sussex County, both on and off premise, for which you will not find a permit if you go to the Planning and Zoning or the Building and Licensing Department. And the simple reason for that is that those signs existed before you were required to get a permit or any type of other approval. After that, there came a time period when DLDOT regulated everything having to do with off-premise signs. And again, you would not find a permit necessarily here in the county. So by including the words by permit in the proposed definition, you've created a new type of non-conforming sign. You would have a non-conforming sign that met the definition of this, and then you would also have a non-conforming sign that didn't even meet the definition of a non-conforming sign. And by simply deleting the words by permit, you then have essentially the one bucket of non-conforming signs. The next primary section of the code that was referenced by Mr. Sharp a moment ago appears on page 7. And what you will see on page 7 is signs prohibited in all districts, and that's all the various zoning districts. Under the alternate ordinance, subsection I is proposed to be deleted, and that is animated signs. This will be discussed in more detail when we get into the discussion about electronic message centers. But essentially, again, just very quickly, that relates to whether or not a sign can fade, dissolve, things that you commonly see on signs. I'll address that in more detail when we discuss electronic message centers. If turning the page to page 8, there's a prohibition on V signs. Again, this was not discussed at the working group, and no reason is given for a prohibition on V signs. V signs serve a very useful purpose. There are many instances and locations on roads where you need a V sign in order for the field of view when people are driving to be able to view the sign safely the entire time. The third category of signs, which is the third deletion that is in the alternate ordinance, is signs which have more than two sign faces, which is subsection N in the proposed ordinance. Again, this is one of those ones where I talked about the definitions being important. I wanted to show some examples. I know when this was presented at the Planning Commission, there was several questions that were raised, and the best way to answer those questions is by showing pictures. Of the ordinance, I'm on page 8, top of page 8. And these are, again, subsection N, signs which have more than two sign faces. These are the definitions that are implicated in that. You'll see the multi-face sign. Again, the bracketed language is what was deleted. And what is proposed to be replaced is a sign that has one but no more than two sign faces. And they have to be parallel to each other and not more than 3 feet from one sign face to the other sign face. Again, below that, we pick up the sign copy definition, which I referenced previously, and then sign face has its definition there. If you look at this sign here, which is Candy Kitchen on Route 1, you will see that there are four facings on that sign. There are two on the front and two on the rear. This is a very common pylon sign configuration. Those are distinct signs. The top sign obviously is Candy Kitchen's name and logo, and the bottom sign is simply a message center where they would put whatever specials they had or something else to bring a person into the store there. And with how the definitions are currently worded in what was proposed in the county, that is a total of four facings which would be prohibited. because subsection N says signs which have more than two sign faces.
Is that permitted? Is that sign in violation then?
The sign, currently it is not. It would be in violation if the proposed ordinance was passed.
It was permitted. It wasn't any variances granted?
That's correct. This sign has the same thing. As you can see, this is the Popeye sign a little further south on Route 1. And again, those are six distinct facings as those terms are used in the proposed ordinance. Again, this is a very common configuration that you would see for almost any business. I think most McDonald's, Burger King's, and other types of stores like that use this configuration of a pylon sign with a stationary emblem for their logo. And then a message center. Obviously, this message center is manual as opposed to the one at Candy Kitchen, which was an electronic message center. The ordinance, as it's proposed on this one, shows at least eight facings. This is just a little further south on Route 1. It's unclear to me whether or not the ones at the bottom would all be individual, which is why I have that there's only eight plus signs here. But at a minimum, it's eight. If you wanted to include the separate individual businesses, I couldn't tell when I was there whether or not how that sign was exactly configured, but there's a minimum of eight signs, four on each side, with the four on the opposite side, and then however the bottom of that sign would be calculated. And again, this is a conforming sign for an on-premise sign under the current zoning code, where you're allowed 200 square feet of on-premise signage. Turning several pages ahead in the alternate ordinance, if you turn to page 10, what is described on page 10 are signs that are permitted in various zoning classifications and districts. Specifically, on page 10, the discussion relates to B1, and there are many businesses, obviously, throughout Sussex County that this would impact. As the B1 district, there is a significant amount of that along commercial corridors and highways. Moving down to subsection 4, you will see that the proposal from the county is to make it so that there's only one on-premise sign per parcel. And the issue with this is that there are many parcels where a business is located between roadways or along two roadways, and has historically, businesses have put signage on both of those roads on which they front. And this is a proposal to limit them, and the business owner at that point has to choose which road frontage it is that they want to advertise the location of their business on. Again, the letter of support from the Federation of Independent Businesses, on-premise sign advertising is, for many small businesses, the only type of advertising that they do. It gives people the location of their business, but also helps to advertise what is going on the property. And it's the primary source for most small businesses of the advertising and recognition that they can have as they attempt to keep their business operating successfully.
But on a corner, on the highway, let's say 113, and the road coming in and on the corner, you put a sign on the corner, you should have it facing the major highway, which would also pick up the other road that tees into it. Why should they get two signs to be able to face the same direction? The one sign would do both, right?
Two reasons.
Okay.
One is that the county, under the proposed ordinance, wants to prohibit V signs. So you might be able to, prior to the introduced ordinance, to make a V sign there and try to pick up both the roads at the corner, but also because it's not always a perfect corner. There could be road frontage where parcels are adjacent to the roadways, but there isn't a corner where you can pick up both roads successfully and meet DLDOT's requirements and the county corner requirements and advertise on both of those. And again, this has been the standard in Sussex County for many years, and it allows parcels with frontage, and it might not be a corner. A parcel could be a through parcel and have frontage on a road and a main highway and not be at a corner where you might be able to use a V sign or an angled sign to pick up the frontage on both both of the roadways. If you move down the page to the bottom of page 10 and the top of page 11, there is the proposed ordinance from the county states that there would be one on-premises wall, illuminated awning, marquee, or projecting sign not to exceed 150 square feet. And I know that this section has been troublesome for as long as I think there's been a sign ordinance in Sussex County. I know I've had discussions with Mr. Lank and most of the staff members in the Planning and Zoning Department at one time or another regarding the interpretation of the current version. The difficulty with and problem with what was proposed is that it limits a wall sign like this to simply one. And if you look at this, the Wendy's restaurant again on Route 1, there you have two signs with the new definition of a logo and a sign. At a minimum, there's two here. There's a possibility of anywhere up to five, depending on how you're going to calculate what is an individual and separate sign there. Again, this would be this is conforming under the current code and would be non-conforming if the county were to adopt the ordinance as it was introduced. Similarly, this is the Panera Bread on Route 1. You will see that, again, this is one wall, and if you're limited to one on-premises wall sign, then numerous of these signs and logos and emblems become non-conforming. The same is true of the side of their building. This is on the northern exposure of their building. It matches the exposure on Route 1. And Applebee's is another prime example of this. They have the Applebee's logo on each of the awnings for their business. As the ordinance was introduced, some of that signage would have to be removed as is non-conforming signage under the proposed ordinance. Instead of the proposed ordinance, what the alternate ordinance recommends and asks to be adopted is to return to 150 square feet or 15% of a total of all of those things. So you would determine the area of what is shown there at on the Applebee's sign of each of those, the words, and each of the various logo signs on the awnings, and total that up and compare it to the square footage of the building and determine in that fashion whether or not that signage is allowed, or they would have to reduce the size of the logo or the awnings or the text that's on the side of the building. If you move forward in the alternate ordinance to page 11, that is simply the same changes, because generally speaking, the signage for on-premise signs that's allowed in the B1 district is the same as is allowed in the C1 district and CR1 district, and what is shown there are the same changes being made as were proposed for the B1 district and the C1 district. I'm going to pick on Candy Kitchen again, but this is a C1 property right on Route 1, and again, the signage there is their logos and then various things to attract people to eat candy, fudge, and all the other good things that they sell. And all of those except for one would become non-conforming under the ordinance that was introduced by council. The next section of the code, again, we're still staying in the C1, the commercial and industrial signage area, which starts at the bottom of page 12 and moves through page 14. And these relate to the off-premise signage for the code. You will see that what What is proposed is to break these things down into categories of setbacks, separation distances, height requirements, size requirements, and then a DELDOT requirement. In addition, the working group recommended that there be two different standards for off-premise signs, that roads having two travel lanes have one set of standards, and roads with more than two travel lanes having a different standard. Yes, correct. And actually, if you look in your exhibit notebook, tab 2 is the PowerPoint presentation from February the 9th, which has each of the recommendations from the working group that Mr. Sharp presented at the joint session. And that's a good cross-reference between the alternate ordinance as well as the what was recommended on at that meeting. With respect to off-premise signs, as you know, currently off-premise signs have a height limit of 25 feet. They're supposed to be, the separation distance is required to be 300 feet from another billboard and 300 feet from a dwelling, church, school, or public lands. The setbacks are 25 feet on the front, 50 feet on the side, and there is not currently a rear yard setback. In addition, the area of a sign is 300 square feet per side. The ordinance that was introduced by council changes the height of a sign from 25 feet to 35 feet, changes the separation distance between billboards from 300 feet to 1,000 feet, and changes the separation distance from a billboard to a dwelling, church, school, or public lands from 300 feet to 500 feet. The setbacks that were proposed stay the same, except for the rear yard setback now becomes whatever is pertinent to a building in the relevant zoning district. In addition, the size of a sign would stay at 300 square feet. The proposal that you have in front of you, again, breaks the signs down into two categories. A category for the two-lane roads, and that is one of the changes from the Planning and Zoning Commission version. If you look on page 13, you'll see that I describe them as for all roads with less than two travel lanes. I think I may just have described each of your driveways or perhaps an alley, because that would be a one-lane road, and I don't believe that there are one-lane roads here in Sussex County. So if you strike that, you're looking at roads with two travel lanes, and the standard that would be there would stay with the current height of a sign, which is 25 feet. The separation distance from another billboard would be 500 feet instead of 300 feet. The separation distance from a dwelling, church, school, or public land is 300 feet, and both of those would be measured on a radius, which is how they're currently measured. You basically take the sign and draw a circle around it and make sure that you're 300 feet from any of those things. And the size limitation for two-lane roads would be 300 square feet. For roads with more than two lanes, the proposed height is 35 feet. The separation distance between billboards moves from 300 to 500 feet. And that 500 feet would be measured linearly, which means that you're looking at billboards on the same side of the highway. This is the same way that DELDOT measures separation distances between off-premise signs. And again, this was a recommendation of the working group. For the separation distance from dwellings, churches, schools, public lands, that was the proposal in the alternate ordinance, is that that stays at 300 square feet and be measured on a radius as it currently is. The setbacks are the same as they currently are, with the addition of a rear yard setback to match the same rear yard that was in the ordinance introduced by the county. The size of the signs would be 600 square feet, which is consistent with the signage on those roads. And for both sets of signs, whether you're on a two-lane road or a roadway with more than two lanes, you would have to have DELDOT approval prior to filing, which again, that is consistent with the ordinance that was introduced by county. If you move forward to page 15, about the middle of the page, you will see that at line 17, which is subsection D, one of the things that was stricken is that there will be no variances from any regulations for off-premise signs. There were two sections in what was introduced by the county where the proposal was to prohibit any variances. One is on off-premise signs, and the other is for electronic message centers. Again, this is a unique provision. It's to be the first time in Sussex County's zoning history that something is found in its zoning code for which a person, an applicant, property owner, cannot seek a variance. Variances exist for unique situations. I've presented many variance requests before the County Board of Adjustment and all the municipalities that are in Sussex County. And it's impossible for anyone to say today whether or not there's a unique situation that requires a variance for a sign.
I bet with the state of Del, when you're on one of the Del Dot roads and you have a variance issue, how do you approach that? They don't grant variances if I'm not mistaken. Correct?
That's correct.
So it's okay, the state does it, but the county or the municipality shouldn't do it.
The state...
Is that what you kind of just said?
No, well, the state only regulates a certain number of roads.
On the roads they regulate, they do not permit variances.
But they do, well, they have variances in limited circumstances, yes.
They do.
Well,
I thought they didn't have any.
They do. But it is correct that, for instance, they don't have a variance process, except in, I think there's one limited circumstance in which they do, but they do not have a variance process. But state law doesn't require them to have a variance process. The county's required to have a variance process for the provisions of its zoning code, which is what it has. And what the alternate ordinance says is you can have a variance for...
Our attorneys can maybe make a note of that to tell us if that's the case, if we have to have a variance provision to say no, or whatever. Just if what he just said, Vince, if you could, or Jamie, Everett, all three. We have three against you.
And do I understand that we're talking about the county having providing a procedure for variance, but are you saying that every subject should be subject to a variance? Every item? Everything?
Yes.
100%?
Yes, I think, which is your current code, says that if you have an issue with the zoning code and the use of your property, you have a unique situation. Mm-hmm. If you can't fit something here or there, you go and file an application. There's a process laid out, and you go to a public hearing, and you present your case. Mm-hmm. And if the board feels that the situation meets the factors for the code, then the variance is granted. Mm-hmm. What Mr. Cole was referencing, I think, is that you won't find a process in the state code for a variance in DelDOT, whether it's signs or any. There's just not a variance process. But the same state code does require every county, it's not just Sussex County, they didn't pick on Sussex County, but the all states, the municipalities and the county governments have a variance process. What's proposed in the alternate ordinance begs the question, if every time Sussex County passes a new zoning ordinance, is it going to prohibit variances moving forward on whatever the subject matter would be? To me, this is a very slippery slope for Sussex County to go down. If a person can meet the factors for the granting of a variance, then they should be granted that variance. The next sections in the proposed ordinance deal with fees and enforcement, and that was a common theme at the working group. Everybody felt that those were issues that needed to be addressed better, and so you won't see any additions or deletions, as those were items that were followed. There wasn't any controversy on those from any portion of the working group at any time, and frankly, those items went very quickly at the working group, as very little time was spent on them. The next issue some time will need to be spent on is electronic message centers. As the ordinance was introduced by council, it appears that there is a fear of electronic signs that exists. I'm on page 18. And there shouldn't be a fear, this is Deaver, of electronic signs. They've existed for many, many years. They've obviously become... It appears that way.
Fear.
Oh.
The There shouldn't be, though. Again, as I stated, they've become very prevalent lately. There are electronic signs in the images that I've already shown to you. And...
Well, I represent Lewis, remember? Mm-hmm. And they may have a different opinion than you're talking about.
The town
of
Lewis.
Yeah, the town and the other folks that live in the third district.
The one of the...
One of the busiest districts in the county.
The primary concern that every sign company and sign owner and business owner hears about electronic message centers is that they're not safe, that they're a distraction to driving. There have been numerous studies. Again, this is the signs, electronic signs, LED signs, all the different versions of electronic message centers have existed for more than 30 years. As you can see on the slide that's in front of you, the Federal Highway Administration conducted studies in 1980, 2001, 2009, 2012. The other studies and their dates are referenced there, and there is not one study in which you will find that electronic message centers lead to accidents, that they are unsafe, or anything along those lines. If you were to read all those reports, you would see that there is no statistical difference between the amount of time a person looks at a static sign or a digital sign along the highway. And that the very bottom one, I'll show you a chart in a minute, but glances at digital signs are within the safe range. The Federal Highway Administration regulates these things carefully, and... Actually, the studies are located within the exhibit book Yes.
And they're neutral.
The source is the Federal Highway Administration.
You want me to believe that a static sign and something moving attracts my attention equally?
You spend the same amount of time looking at it, yes.
Okay, that double talk for meaning that once I look at it, once it has attracted my attention, does one attract your attention more than the other, would you say?
I think that would belong to the individual person, not... you're not going to look at one any longer than the other.
I understand what you're saying, but does one attract you more so than the other? What would you think?
I don't...
You don't think a flashing sign would attract my attention more than a static sign?
I suppose it could initially, but I'm not
otherwise,
sure...
Otherwise, why would you go to the electronics? It's to get the attention. The idea of a sign is to get your attention right. So an electronic sign is designed to get your attention more readily than a stationary sign. I don't think that's obvious.
I mean, I think that those are true statements, but that's not the primary purpose of an electronic sign. Much easier for somebody sitting at their desk to change
the
advertising
to
convey information about the business. And you're seem to be focused on the initial glance at it, and the initial glance is not the concern of a safety study. The concern of a safety study is how long do you look at that sign? Does it distract you? For instance, if you're texting while driving, you're distracted for 4.6 seconds, and that's obviously why the state has enacted laws against texting and driving. Under the federal highway standards, a dangerous level is when you're distracted from looking at something for more than 2 seconds. The studies all show that a glance at an electronic message center, again, whether it's flashing Mr. Cole or whatever it's doing, is less than a second. So regardless of whether that sign that scrolled a message attracted your attention more than a sign where somebody physically put the letters up, the time period in which it was viewed is less than a second, which is more...
There's a message up there, if I read it in a second, read the message in 1 second, then it bumps safe. If it takes me 2 seconds to read the message, it's a dangerous level. Is that what that says?
That's correct. Actually, most messages are read in...
You're a slow reader.
The research shows most people read a sign in less than 3/10 of a second, Mr. Cole. Mm-hmm. So if you're slow, you're probably at 6/10 of a second. I just doubled the time.
All right.
Do you have any research from folks about what signs do to the value of properties, especially properties that depend on tourism? Research on
the correlation between having a sign and how much business you have?
Especially the electronic signs.
I don't have any study that directly correlates those those two things. But again, the as I mentioned earlier, the primary source of advertising for most small businesses is their on-premise sign, which is why they want to be able to convey as much information as possible. Candy Kitchen wants you to know that if you buy 2 pounds of fudge today, you get a third pound free. They want you to stop in and get your 2 pounds and spend some money at their store. And they can change that message in an instant with an electronic message center. They don't send somebody outside with a, that goofy thing to change the letters on the signboard. And that's the, you know, that's one of the primary advantages to having something like an electronic message center. And again, the concern has always been safety. And there's not, you're not going to find a study that that indicates that they are unsafe.
So we're not talking about taste or good design or anything along those lines.
Mr. Before you go on, Mr. President, I have a quick question. Could you go back to the previous slide?
Sure.
And because I am paying attention, and and I want to ask you the question of the bigger picture. So I know the examples you've provided are on-premise, any kitchen, the like. That there says billboard. So can we, is that which references typically an off-premise? So are we talking about off-premise or are we talking about on-premise as it relates to this? Or does that make a difference in this study?
It does not. The research is the same, whether it's an electronic message center. I'm using that broadly, but you are correct. An electronic message center, digital billboard, but the research is the same on both of those. And frankly, I'm glad you asked the question, because the next slide, this.
I knew that was going to be a good transitional statement.
And I appreciate that. The Federal Highway Administration did study digital billboards specifically. And in fact, one of the studies.
And again, billboards, I mean, it's important because, as you know, the code is different. So I just want to make sure for the illustration here, billboard in this example that you're providing, it's just an electronic messaging center.
Correct.
It's not billboard, i.e. off-premise. It's just how the message is being displayed electronically.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
So I just want to make sure I have the right lingo. Because when I hear billboard, I'm mentally thinking off-premise.
That's correct. A billboard isn't.
This example here, that's not what's being referenced. I mean,
in what? In
Federal Highway, I mean, it's, has line number two there. It says it has studied digital billboards.
This study is billboards, no on-premise signs.
Okay. So as we go through this, make sure if you would, for my simplicity need, if you would, make sure if I understand off-premise to on-premise.
Big difference.
Well, I mean, because it's the way it's, the code is written. Mm-hmm.
And the two should be kept distinct. They are different. Mm-hmm. They are, you know, they're different signs.
Words have meanings. Okay.
As long as these signs are to incorporate,
in the corporate area that they enforce themselves.
That's right. So what difference, so what, outside of corporations, how are you?
Mr. Kramer, I got you. Speak in the microphone, please.
Okay. As long as you don't see a sign in corporate areas, it doesn't make any difference, right? As far as CAN is concerned. CAN has no jurisdiction over that.
Correct. If in the town of Georgetown, the Sussex County has no say over what the, if you go out to the highway out here where McDonald's is, I'm pretty sure that's part of the town of Georgetown.
That's all corporate, all the way to the radio station. It's corporate. It's all corporate limits, all the way up to the new.
Right. So the town of Georgetown has its own sign code.
Have to say that.
Correct.
And our developer, the same way it comes up to Stoke, up to Stoke Center, it's corporate.
Correct.
So we really had nothing to say about it. So I hardly ever see a billboard here anyway. So we could sit here and go through all this nonsense until dark. Mm-hmm. But actually we have very little to say about it. And I can see very little, I see the point of what you're saying.
Okay.
But thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, my interest is in the coastal highway.
And same with Joan, that's down in the middle, you can go down and do it all you want. And those people down there, I guarantee it's got all those corporate limits. We're not going to put up this nonsense.
Thank you.
And say we can't do it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
At the billboards.
And digital billboards. The study that's referenced here is a 2013 study, and both of these locations are very close to here. They've studied the digital billboards along Route 422 in Reading, and they studied the billboards in Richmond, Virginia. And the average glance, and this may answer your question, Mr. Cole, about a quick reader versus a slow reader.
Well, I am born and raised and educated at Rehoboth High School.
Georgia is a little slow.
When I was in English, then I'd be where I am today.
I've even slowed down since I moved here.
Then perhaps,
I agree with that.
Then perhaps both of you would be at the bottom arrow there, which is the longest glance, which is 1.35 seconds. Whereas it says the average person, but we'll say an exceptional person, would read it in 0.379. And so, but both, again, and those were studies of digital billboards along Route 422, if you're not familiar with it in Reading, is a 4-, 5-, 6-lane highway at different locations. And there are numerous digital billboards along that stretch of Route 422 that they were examining. And most of these studies are included in your exhibit notebook. If you'd like any more studies, I can give them all to you. But I can tell you that they all have one common theme, which is the time that a person spends looking at electronic media is no longer than it is at static media, and the glances that are there are well within what the Federal Highway Administration says is a safe amount of time to look at a sign.
Well, why would anybody invest in the electronic? If the same amount of time, people look at the one sign, same amount of time as the other type of sign, why would anybody bother to invest in electronic signs?
Well, if you own the sign, you could have more than one business advertising.
Well, I think you want people to look at it, right? Didn't you just say that a standard sign, people look at that as long as they would an electronic sign? Mm-hmm. I thought that's what you were saying.
It is.
Why have electronic?
So that you can change your message, you can have multiple